Okay. Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is 30th, Tuesday, July 2019. Also coincide with the Agong's installation day. That's why it's a public holiday and everybody is early today. The usual people who are late also early, Han and Vincent. Normally they come after the first puja chanting, but they are early today, so it's good sign. Holiday means less traffic. Okay, let us now compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, and mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Namo Bhansi Sajjiya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajjiya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajjiya Moni Pho. Namo Kwansing Pusa. Namo Kwansing Pusa. Namo Kwansing Pusa. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Pusyen Pusa. Namo Pusyen Pusa. Namo Pusyen Pusa. Namo Dizang Huang Pusa. Namo Dizang Huang Pusa. Namo Dizang Huang Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then turn to page one of the chanting book. We shall chant the Vandana onwards. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panatipata Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Adinadana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Kamesu Micchacara Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Musavada Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Suramiraya Majapamadatana เวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาธิยามิดาววิวัชันตปฏิปาปูจา offering of light กันนาสารปฏิเทนะดิเพนะธรรมดังสินะกิโลกาดิปังสัมบุตดังปูจายามิตโมนุดังกันดาสัมบรยุเตนะโดเปนะหังสุกังหินะปูจายะปูจานิยังปังปูจาบัจานะโมเตมังวันนากันดาโกนเปตังเอตังกสุมาสันตตินปูจายามิโมนินดาสสิริปาดาสโรโรเหปูเจมิปุตตังกสุเมนาเนนะปุณเณนะมัตเตนะเชโหตุโมคังปูปังมิลายติยัตตาอิดังเมคายโยตตายติวินาสบาวังอาดิวาเสทโนบันเตปานิยังปริกาปิทังอนุคัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาตุโมตมังอาดิวาเสทโนบันเตปาเลปริกาปิทังอนุคัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาตุโมตมังอาดิวาเสทโนบันเตโบจานังปริกาปิทังอนุคัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาตุโมตมังNow we will chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water.May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses all the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which are offering to the Blessed One.Who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the dana parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers.May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana, making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of our May our spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Tripaja. Vedang Pajami. Dhammang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Okay. You can be seated and we can have half an hour of silent awareness meditation, view of the light. Then you all can just silent your mind, relax body and mind, and develop the meditation. Okay. I will set the alarm in 30 minutes time. The alarm will be triggered off. Then you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. The key to developing this meditation is very simple. Understand that your original state of mind without the thinking is already the meditative state of awareness, that true mind. You only need to realize the true mind. Then your meditation will progress. Just relax, maintain awareness until that sati stabilizes. Then the mind enters sati. After you realize pasati, which is the tranquility of mind or stillness of mind, your mind will enter sati very easily. Then from there onward, you will develop fast progress. Then after you come out of the meditation, you will realize you are different. Your sati has become very stable, very different. Then whatever you do, all this activity that goes on within your form and mind, your sati can pick it up. And you become very sensitive. And when your mind enters sati, all your action, all your movement within the present moment, it can be aware. Then as you come out of the meditation, you can also develop what they call the stability of mindfulness. Means every moment of sense experience in your seeing, you see with awareness. Then hearing, smell, taste, tactile or thought process, they are all in sati. That's why the mind that enters sati is very different. When you can have this type of mind, your daily mindfulness will come. It will become very stable. Then everything you do, you understand. Okay. So that mind in sati can meditate, can develop a lot of understanding and awakening. So just train your spiritual faculty, your daily mindfulness. Then when you sit, you will go into the meditative state very fast. Technically, you don't need any object of meditation also. Straight away, the sati will be there. But for those who still need to train their mind, stabilize the sati, then you can use whatever object of meditation that you are familiar with to develop the stability of it. If you do anapanasati, you just do until the mind becomes very quiet, very peaceful, and very still. Until the mind enters pasati, realizes the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, your true mind. Then if you continue to relax and aware without any movement, your mind will enter sati. Means the higher awareness, the higher mindfulness or sati can be realized. And that is your meditative mind. Use it to develop understanding of whatever that is going on within your form and mind. Okay, now I will stop the instruction. Then you can continue with your meditation. Okay, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Then turn to page 6. We will chant the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release. Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chakravalisu Atra Gacchantu Devata Sattamang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahaṃ sammasambuddho Vijja charana sampanno sugato lokavidu Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanaṃ Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachyatang Veditadbo Vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato savakasango Ujjupatipanno bhagavato savakasango Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasango Samichipatipanno bhagavato Sāvaka Sāṅgho Yatidāṁ Chattāri Purisa Yukāni Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Sāvaka Sāṅgho Āhuneyo Pāhuneyo Dākheneyo Anjali karaniyo anutarang punyaketang lokasati sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect to Paja. Buddhaṃ pujami. Dhammaṃ pujami. Sanghaṃ pujami. Okay, you all can be seated. Just relax body and mind. Then we will have our second session. I think this chapter 35 we are finishing. There is only one or two more pages to go. But before that, I would like to share with you our last Tuesday class outline short note, which is very good. The outline short note was prepared by Sui, my daughter. If you turn to my Kayanamita, I just sent over just now before we start our class. So you can own it and we can discuss it. Okay. So our Tuesday class dated 23rd July 2009. The first session we did the recap for our last week sharing, which is the 23rd of July. So the first point is Brother Theo did a revision and recap of our last Tuesday class, which was the 16th of July. 2009, because last Tuesday class was 23rd. By reading through the outline short notes again. Then point number two, this one is very important. You must make sure you remember them. Wisdom, which is an understanding or an awakening. So this is not a knowledge. So wisdom, which is an understanding or awakening connected to the form and mind, is not a knowledge. Because when the form and mind awaken through its silent mind, it will have the understanding. And this wisdom is connected to our form and mind within the nature. It will not be lost. Unless the form and mind ceases to be or goes through parinibbana. And then it will follow that form of mind. Point number three. Without going through the cessation of Nibbana, one can never understand the true depth and meaning of the Buddha's teaching. Even a glimpse of its cessation is good enough. Without the wisdom, this form of mind cannot cease. When the form of mind cannot cease, it cannot understand what Nibbana is. The reason being, Nibbana is the unconditioned. Point number five. When the form of mind sees, it is fully aware of the whole process of cessation. This form of mind, after the cessation, after the consciousness come back or returns to the form of mind, will understand everything very clearly. The consciousness will undergo an extraordinary transformation. Then point number six, Pu Sen Pu Mie in Mandarin. The meaning is non-arising and non-ceasing. Sen is arising, Mie is ceasing. Pu Sen Pu Mie, the state of non-arising and non-ceasing, is a Nibbanic state. One need to go through this state of non-arising and non-ceasing to realize the unconditioned. Please make a note of the word state. I put inverted comma up there. It's not really a state because it's the unconditioned. So during cessation, it's not a mind state at all. It has nothing to do with mind because everything ceases. But for communication, I have to use a word. So I choose this word. Number seven. Point number seven. Beyond the conditioned world is the unconditioned, which is not possible to express with words. Example, there is a famous saying from the Tao's teaching that goes as follows. Whatever that can be described, spoken or talked about, that is not the true Tao. Yet nothing is apart from the Tao. everything arises from the Tao. So this is same as our true nature, our Buddha nature. Point number 8, Sister Yun Chan asks, at the first glimpse of Nibbana, is that person already a Sotapan? Yes. The form of mind that has a glimpse of Nibbana is at least a Sotapan or Sotapana. The glimpse of Nibbana is very powerful, resulting in a significant change of lineage from a Puttajana, a lay person, to an Arya, an enlightened being. In Pali, it is called Gotrabhu Jnana. One needs to realize this Gotrabhu Jnana or insight for this change of lineage to occur. That's why you must go through this cessation, which is an insight. That's why after that cessation, the form of mind will understand very clearly what that thing is. Then that form of mind transform and become an Arya. But that form of mind is not you. After that glimpse, everything that the person see, feel, think becomes totally different. With the direct seeing, all Dhamma becomes so clear and easy to understand, especially Sakyadity or self-delusion. The mind becomes so fine, so sensitive, and will keep on going into cessation. Cessation keeps happening, lasting longer and longer. Then point number 11. According to Brother Theo, this year 2019 marks his 15 years of Dhamma sharing with the world since 2004. This coming 6th of October 2019, our annual lunch gathering of Kayanamita at F1 Kitchen, Puchong, will be our 15th anniversary celebration. As such, all Kayanamitas are encouraged to join our coming 6th October 2019 lunch camp birthday annual gathering of Kayanamita celebration. So this year, try to make it, because it is going to be very significant. And after 15 years, quite a lot of things has happened. Then there are two transcripts, I think. It has taken us quite a while, because one of them I didn't receive, but they thought they sent to me. Then lately, I think Adeline and Christy, they did it, so they sent it to me. So I'm in the midst of finalizing it. That one is very good. That one is, I think, lesson 84 of our Six Patria Platform Sutta. That transcript is very good. I gave a lot of sharing because of a lot of special condition then. So when it's ready, do go through it. Then there's another one, I think. Padmasuri sent to me the 10 Bodhisattva way, the 10 lesson of our Bodhisattva way. Initially, it was prepared by the sister in Singapore, I think. I forgot her name. Then Padmasuri finished it off, I think. So that one is still with me. I'm still going through it. I hope to finish it off too. So these two, we can get it off before the annual gathering. Okay, after that, point number 12. Sister Adeline asks, if someone goes through cessation, would there be changes to their chakras? So my answer is very simple. Cessation has nothing to do with external chakra opening, because cessation can only happen when wisdom is realized. Opening the chakra before having the wisdom is equivalent to tempering with the chakras, and this tempering can cause yin-yang imbalance. Point number 14, only wisdom is required for cessation to happen. Always remember, the mind must become very fine and still, with a very stable mindfulness and wisdom connected we are in awakening. At the moment of sense contact or sense experience, the wisdom would not allow the mind to move, stir or react. The mind becomes very beautiful because it's well trained and skillful. It already has the understanding. So when you can do that daily mindfulness until that stability, then develop the insight into the characteristics of nature, the three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state and non-self, then it's a matter of time. Your mind will cease. Yeah. Initially, you tend to have a glimpse of it. Then after that, you reflect, contemplate and develop the understanding very clearly. Then it will keep on happening, yeah, for longer and longer period. Point number 15. The true internal opening of chakras occur after you have connected to your true nature. Sorry, after you have connected to your true nature, via your gateway to your true nature. The pure nature's very fine stillness come wisdom energy or pure energy will activate the chakra and nadis, yeah, within on its own via trust, without interference from the mundane mind or thought. Just trust your nature and let the external yin yang energy flow through your gateway, turning it into pure energy. This is using the fourth support of trust to meditate. When the mind with the wisdom energy becomes so fine, the gross energy of the mundane mind is no longer able to withstand it, then the mundane mind will collapse, falling off like a layer of consciousness. We can call it the wheel of ignorance occurring in front of your forehead. Then part B is continuation of the Buddha and his teaching by Venerable Narada, the way to realize Nibbana, page 512. Point number 18. The middle path or way has two meanings. First meaning is to avoid the two extremes of self-mortification and self-indulgence. The second meaning is to transcend duality via wisdom, not judging, having instead a natural acceptance for what is through wisdom or understanding. Then point number 19. Right thought and right effort are still thought-based, hence should be categorized under sila. Then the advice of the Buddha, sabba papasa akaranang kusalesa upasampadan sacitta pariyodapanang etang buddhana sasana. All evil must be avoided, whatever that is wholesome, if there is condition to purify the mind. This is the advice of all Buddhas. Point 21. Question for the class. When an animal kills due to animal instinct, is it excusable, or would there be karmic consequence? The answer is very straightforward. Karma is you reap what you sow, hence there is always karmic consequence. And the fifth daily contemplation as taught by the Buddha also state the same. We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. So when you are born an animal, like I explained, it is due mainly to wish evil root. The animal kingdom, wish evil root. Ignorant. So because of ignorance you come, you call that animal instinct, of course. The scientist is correct by saying that you are an animal, that's why you got an instinct, and you will kill. But not all animals kill, that's why not. Some have good heart, just like human being. Not all human being has the delusion, the violence. So this fifth daily contemplation is very clear. 24. Sense restraint born of understanding is very profound. is not blindly trying to suppress or control or bottle up your emotion, without being aware of the evil roots causing the internal conflict within oneself. So this one is very important. Sense restraint must be born of wisdom or understanding. It's not through suppression or restraint through wrong view, not wanting to allow the anger to come out. All this is not sense restraint. Sense restraint means with the wisdom you know this is not right. This will lead to karmic negativity. It cannot be done. That's why there is sense restraint. But if you go and think otherwise, you say anger is an evil root. Selfishness is an evil root. So you want to do away with anger. What you do? You try not to get angry. That is suppression. That is not wisdom. Then point number 25. The real cultivation is the five spiritual faculty and the four foundation of mindfulness. Always remember, when your spiritual faculty is there, the mental hindrances, then you can meditate. Then after that, you will realize the sense restraint. You will realize the three way of right conduct. Then only you move on to the four foundation of mindfulness. That's how you transform and awaken. Then point number 26. For the sharing of true life stories or experiences during the class, please listen to the recording. I think we share quite a lot of story or experiences. So you want to know more, you can just turn on the audio file. Then there is also some video file in there. We did the video last Tuesday. Don't have, you were not around. Oh, never mind. So no need video, the audio file. Okay, now we can turn to page 517 to continue from where we stopped. The way to realize Nibbana. A bhikkhu is expected to observe the four kinds of higher morality, namely Patimokkha Sila, the fundamental moral code. The second one is Indriya Yasamvara Sila, morality pertaining to sense restraint. Then the third one is Ajiva Parisuddhi Sila, morality pertaining to purification of livelihood. And the fourth one is Pachaya Sanisita Sila, morality pertaining to the use of the necessity of life, means the four requisites or whatever people offer you for your support. These four kinds of morality are collectively called Sila Visuddhi, purification of virtue. The first of the seven stages of purification on how to realize Nibbana. There are seven stages of purification according to the Buddha in his teaching. And this one is described quite in detail by the Visuddhi Marga. So you have this first one, Sila Visuddhi. Then you have your Ditti Visuddhi, means purification of morality followed by purification of views. That's why you must straighten your views. Then Chitta Visuddhi, purification of mind, consciousness. The content of consciousness. Then what is path and non-path and all those things. There are seven of them. You can refer to our Heart Sutra book if you want. When a person enters the order, means ordination, to become a monk, and receive his higher ordination, they call it Upasampada, he is called a bhikkhu. There is no English equivalent that exactly conveys the meaning of this Pali word. as the nearest translation, not in the sense of one who begs, but in the sense of one who lives on alms, means they are not monks who go around begging. They live on alms, means they go for alms round. Alms round means they are worthy of offering. That's why they go for alms. And if you understand the synergy that the Buddha came out with, you should make offering to this well practiced and worthy cultivators. So when they go for alms, if they receive alms and they are worthy, then the alms can bring about a lot of wholesomeness, merit to the people, lay people, who actually provide them with the alms. Then they say there are no vows for a bhikkhu. Of his own accord, he became a bhikkhu in order to lead the holy life as long as he likes. He is at liberty to leave the order at any time. A bhikkhu is bound to observe 220 rules or precepts, apart from the several other minor ones. The four major rules, which deals with perfect celibacy, stealing, murder, and false claim to higher spiritual power, must strictly be observed. So these are the major rules. As a monk, you cannot violate. The moment you violate any of these, you can never become a monk again, because they will have to disqualify you and disrobe you. Means you cannot be a monk. If the bhikkhu violates any of these major rules, he becomes defeated. They call it parajika, means you no longer eligible to be a monk, and automatically cease to be a bhikkhu. If he wishes, he can re-enter the order and remain as a samanera or novik monk. In the case of other rules which he violates, he has to make amends according to the gravity of the offense. Among the saline characteristics of a bhikkhu are, this one is very good. This one, as a lay people, as a lay person or lay cultivator, you can also develop them. It's not difficult. First one is purity. You know what is purity, isn't it? Free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. You must have purity. Then you must have this perfect celibacy. That is for the monk. If you are a lay person, you don't have to go for celibacy. You can only, you can maybe develop the understanding of what is proper marriage relationship, or those who cannot keep to the relationship born of marriage. Nowadays, the young people they find it very difficult to keep the third precept. Means sexual misconduct. How do you define sexual misconduct? Means you are not legally married, the paper not signed, you are not supposed to have any what they call formal exchange that so called married life type of intimacy. So this one is for the monk, perfect celibacy. But if you are a lay person, you can keep to the third precept of the ordinary five precepts. Means you undertake to abstain from sexual misconduct. You don't have to go for full celibacy. In fact, before the Buddha renounced, he also got married. He also have children. So that part is not a compulsory thing. But for monks, they impose that, because you're supposed to lead by example. If monk also can have that type of desire to violate that type of precept, then the community of bhikkhu will not have that status for people to have really had the respect and all those things. So that's why during the Buddha's time, this one is emphasized. Then voluntary poverty. You heard of this or not? Voluntarily want to become poor. Can you be voluntary poor? Don't want to be wealthy. Because as a monk, what must you do? You not only renounce your hair, you must renounce everything you own. Then they give you a new name, means renounce your birth, your name, your parents, your relationship, everything. That's why it's called renunciation. You renounce physically, you renounce everything. So voluntary poverty. You can try it out if you want to. You know how to try it out. I remember I did it once, but I didn't do like normal people. I tried to give up what is important to me. So at that time, I can even like sign off my FD and all those things. Of course, to people whom I can trust, my wife and my family member. Then I felt very different, Means I don't need to have this money under my name as security for me to live the secure life or the good life, Because as long as I know all these are dependent originating condition arising, you technically don't have to own anything. Like when you buy certain investment, shares or fixed income investment, they will give you the return. Understand? So you don't have to own them. But our society recognizes them. If you use your own money to buy them, you have ownership. But then it's like you don't own. Understand? Because it's just a paper telling you that you own. But good thing is they pay you regular dividend or fixed income. So all this can sustain your livelihood, can give you the good life and all those things. So it depends on your understanding. You can adopt true understanding. Then the other one is humility. This one is easy to do. Humility. Most of us can develop humility. Humility is very important. It cut away your ego. It cut away your craving for status and all those things. Then simplicity is very important. This one my nature has. I can be very simple. I can wear very simple clothing. So when I was young, I told you, my mother make for me the shirt. The collar not balanced, long and short one. Then sometimes the cloth material also very cheap one, so easily torn. But I am very simple, I just wear them. Then most of the time I don't wear all these expensive watches, jewelry. I don't know why. I got no liking for all this style of thing. But I do wear them when occasion demands. But for me, whether I wear or I don't wear, it make no difference. It's not to impress your status, because your status outwardly is not that important. But sometimes society demands that. So in order not to create misunderstanding, you go for a certain event or function. You have to dress up, you have to dress up. But no need to be to the extent that you like want to flash your wealth around, impress people. That one no need. That's a humility, simplicity. That's selfless service. Very important. You can do that. You are beautiful. Then, of course, self-restraint. the word is wrong, not control, self-restraint. Patient endurance must be wisdom, with wisdom. Then compassion and harmlessness means people feel safe when they are with you. And you are not the violent type, the greedy, selfish type that will cheat and deceive. So harmlessness is very important. If you can express that type of confidence, then people feel safe when they are with you. They can trust you. Okay, then the last one. The life of a bhikkhu, or in other words, a renunciation of worldly pleasure and ambition, is only an effective means to realize nibbana. They use the word attain, but a better word is realize. But it is not an end in itself. So here the way to nibbana is only the first section. That's why they only talk about the sila visuddhi, first stage of purification. Then we turn to next page, chapter 36, the way to realize nibbana, chapter 2, part 2. So this one, the title is more meaningful, meditation. So we see what this author has to say about meditation. So this one, I think all kayamita are very good, so you can maybe go through it and discuss it. Under the Dhammapada, one way to acquire gain, another that leads to Nibbana. So this is for you to reflect and contemplate. If you are interested in worldly wealth, then you acquire gain, but you are deluded in the sense that you cannot own anything ultimately. So gain and loss is a worldly phenomenon. When you understand the teaching, you know the condition behind the arising, and then you can work towards it. The first aspect is materialistic success, means whatever you want to be successful in life. Especially the mundane aspect of life, they call it the materialistic life. You can have it, but have it through understanding, following the Buddhist way. That's why my coming talk at SJBA, the title is Success in Life, Following the Dhamma Way. If you don't follow the Dhamma Way, there is karmic consequence. Then you can get into trouble. So you can have good life, you can have success in life, you can arise the condition for you to have all these successes in the materialistic sense, for you to have the good life, through understanding the Dhamma. Then after you have this materialistic success, you have to strive for spiritual success. Without that, you will still have problems. The First Noble Truth Reality can still afflict you. You can be very wealthy, very successful, with everything that is possible for you to own. But you cannot overcome the realities of life and existence. The eight reality is expounded by the Buddha in his First Noble Truth. Especially birth, old age, sickness and death. Then of course we have separation. Then of course we have situation when you are with people whom you don't like. Then the seventh one is when things don't go your way. When you are not able to get what you want. Expectations in life are not met. Then in short, the final one. Because you grasp and cling onto this fine aggregate of form and mind, thinking is you real. So this sakkayaditi, self-delusion, will condition the fine aggregates of grasping that will lead to suffering. So if you don't have this meditative wisdom born of the Buddhist teaching, you will suffer. So now we go into it. The first sector that they discuss, they use the word concentration is wrong. Samadhi is not concentration. Samadhi is a mind state that is collected and unwavering, but not in a concentrated state. No. It is in the state of collectedness and what they call unwavering state because of continuous mindfulness up to upacara samadhi. Now that is the real samadhi. Then after that, when the wisdom arises, you can develop the direct seeing through this samadhi. Then it will help you to develop the last factor of enlightenment called upeka or equanimity. So here the author says, securing a firm footing on the ground of morality, the aspirant then embarks upon the higher practice of samadhi, the control and culture of the mind. The word control is wrong. The second stage of the purity, a path of purity. Samadhi is one-pointedness of mind, again wrong. That one is fixed concentration. Samadhi is not one-pointedness of mind. But a lot of the Buddhists who don't understand, they follow Visuddhimagga. Because Visuddhimagga equate jhana as samadhi. The eight jhana. It is concentration of the mind on one object to the entire exclusion of all else. That is not samadhi. The real samadhi is a free mind, not in a conditioned state, but born of understanding. And the understanding need not be the wisdom that lead to awakening yet. Understanding means you must understand your original mind, your true mind, is without thought. Before your mind stir, react, and create thought, that is your true mind. So you must understand, without thought, you are already aware. Then when you meditate, you just relax and silent. Then the natural state of mind will come back. It will fall into place. And that's how you meditate. Then that mind, you continue to allow it to be without stirring it, just like the advice given by the Buddha when he asked Ananda to go and collect some water at a stream or place where no blockade will stir the pool of water. But Ananda went first two times, the water was not conducive for drinking because every time he go during that time, the blockade passed by and churn or stir the water. Then the third time, it was at night, he managed to get the clear water. So full of joy, he came back and happily revealed to the Buddha that he was able to get those water. Then the Buddha asked him, what did you learn from what you just able to gather through collecting this water? Ananda didn't understand what the Buddha say. The Buddha told him, this is what meditation is all about. The first two times, when the blockade stir or churn the pool of water, then you realize the sediment arise and make it dirty, contaminated. So meditation is the same. When your mind stir or react through delusion, through ignorance, through the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then your mind is clouded. That's why there is no clarity. That's why like that water, turbid, not fit for drinking. That is how you meditate. So you just let it be, it will settle down. You don't continuously become heedless to stir your mind, it will settle down. And like the water, the sediment all will settle down. That's how it developed the clarity. Then you can see things clearly. Then you can meditate with that type of mind. And that type of mind can reach a stability we call samadhi, which is the collectedness and unwavering mind. So in the midst of life, you can have this daily mindfulness develop until the stability is there. Then there is samadhi in the midst of life, which means at the moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste or tactile feel something, or arising a thought, the mind will not stir. We are in the state of samadhi, collected and unwavering. And then you can see things as they are. You can understand clearly and you can awaken to the initial wisdom. Yonisomanasikara. That's how samadhi help you to develop the wisdom, the understanding. And sati and samadhi goes together. When sati stabilizes, it becomes samadhi. Yeah. But you have to stay at the upachara samadhi state. You cannot go into apana samadhi. Once you go beyond upachara, it becomes absorption. It becomes apana samadhi. Yeah. That is fixed concentration. It's a conditioned state. Yeah. Or they call it absorption. The mind becomes absorbed into it and develop a lot of stillness and calmness. Then that mind is not a free mind. Then how you do that, you cannot develop the wisdom. All the five mental hindrances are suppressed under those conditioned state. It's not free. That's why you cannot know whether you still have the defilement or not. Okay? Then we read on. According to Buddhism, there are 40 subject or object of meditation that they call kamatana, which differs according to the temperament. So this one is all from Visuddhimagga. The 40 object of meditation are Hindu meditation, not the Buddhist meditation. And all these are not in the Buddhist teaching. But it was incorporated because the author who wrote Visuddhimagga was a famous Hindu Hindu Brahmin, I think, who later on changed to be a Buddhist, studied the Buddhist teaching, and he's an authority in this. That's why when he wrote the Visuddhimagga, he incorporated a lot of Hindu teaching according to his understanding. If I'm not wrong, his name is Buddhaghosa. Don't confuse it with Buddhadasa. Buddhaghosa and Buddhadasa are two different monks. Buddhadasa is from Thailand, Surat Thani, Suan Mok. And he is a very good monk. He is Prachanyantra's teacher, my teacher's teacher, Sikong. He passed away many years ago, also at the age of 80 plus. Anyway, for knowledge, the 40 object of meditation, the first 10 is called kasinas. Namely, there are 10 kasinas. So you read the notes first. Kasina here means whole or complete. It is so called because the projected light issuing from the conceptualized image of the kasina object could be extended everywhere without limitation. You can play with it, the kasina that you develop. It can become very big, very small, and it can manifest in many, many ways. In the case of earth kasina, one makes a circle of about one span and four finger in diameter, and covering it with dark color clay, smooths it well. If there be not enough clay of the dawn color, he may introduce some other kind of clay beneath. This concentrative circle is known as kasina mandala. The remaining kasina should be similarly understood. details are given in the Visuddhimagga. See, he quoted Visuddhimagga. It may be mentioned that light and space kasina are not found in the text. When they are excluded, there are 38 of this object of concentration, yeah? Or meditation object. Earth kasina is the first one. Then water kasina, fire kasina, air kasina. Then you have the blue color, huh? Blue kasina, yellow kasina, red kasina, white kasina, light kasina, and space kasina. Then the 10 impurity, asubha, namely the 10 cups, which are respectively bloated, discolored, fettering, dissected, gnawed to pieces, scattered in pieces, mutilated and scattered in pieces, bloody, worm infested, and skeleton. So this one is under asubha. They call it asubha meditation. Means you meditate based on the stages of decomposition of the human body. When they die, they throw it to the channel ground. So people go there and develop this style of meditation. Sometimes the monk, they take photo, then they use it to meditate in their own monastery or their own kuti. I was told this particular object of meditation, you know who will do it? Those that have lust, understand? Strong lust and strong craving. So they go and contemplate his until everything also to them no longer attractive, understand? So you are supposed to reflect and contemplate. This body is made of element. They are not really you. And when they go the way of nature, when they throw it to the channel ground, it becomes like that. So when it's devoid of consciousness, all this is not what you think. But when they are young, when they put on the ICI, or what they call, my wife used another word, lo pun. You put in money to beautify it, then it will deceive you. Like it look very attractive, very nice. So the fashion, the expensive clothing, jewelry, the perfume, everything, deceive the senses. So all this is for you to reflect on, contemplate on. But like anything that you see in life, everything decay. How many of you really look into this? None. You all never feel that you yourself also age already. Now we ask Karen. Hey, look at Tammy. So when she was Tammy's age, she different. Now, I think Tammy also have been observing the mother. When she was 30 years ago, different. The Karen is very different. You also very different. That's why we age. We go through the process of decay. Then when I see my teachers, my classmates, and others, every time we go for dinner or reunion, I look at them. Actually, not only them, myself also, age a lot. But the only consolation is I didn't age so much as compared to most of them. But whatever it is, decay is something you cannot avoid. Because this is nature. Nature's law, it goes the way of nature. But what you should have is the Dhamma to understand all this, that this is not you. This is just a vehicle and tool for you to come. And this one will go the way of nature. That's why you cannot deludedly grasp and cling, thinking that it's you. Then you will have problem, because you want it to be forever young. Don't get sick, don't get old, and don't die. cannot be, isn't it? So when it goes the other way, when it starts to decay, gets old, be diseased, and finally pending death, what happened? If you don't have the Dhamma, the wisdom, you will suffer. Yeah. You cannot accept what happened. Yeah. Then your thought project, ayo, when I was young, I was so full of youth, full of energy, full of that beauty or that nice look. Then I was capable of so many things. My senses were so good. Wow, now so useless. All the senses are failing me. Everything has started to decay. The hair also decay. The color also change. Maybe you have more silver up there. Last time, charcoal, black. Then if you look at your senses, they start to fail you, understand or not? Then when your organ and your senses start to fail you, start to develop sickness, disease and problem. And these are related to the reality of old age, sickness and death, decay. You need to contemplate, reflect, so that you go through it with understanding, so that you will not become like, are you so worried about it, agitated. There's a lot of people cannot tolerate getting old, no? Especially certain ladies. They really don't want to look old. And you have seen in a lot of people, they give instruction, no? When they die, they want to be nicely make up. They don't want to die with that type of horrible look. This is what delusion is all about. The form and mind is just the form and mind. When consciousness separate, the identity erased, that form and mind no longer exists. It goes the way of nature. All along it was never you. Why do you cling? Why do you grasp? Okay, the third category is the 10 type of reflection. This one easy. These are good meditation object. The 10 type of nusati. Or you call anusati. That's why Buddha nusati. Sila nusati. So there are 8 type of nusati. Buddha nusati. Then Dhamma nusati. Then Sangha nusati. It means the triple gem. Then you have Sila nusati, virtue. Then you got liberality, means generosity. Jaga nusati. Oh, you are very liberal. Then you have, Deva nusati also have. You can reflect and contemplate on the Devas. Peace is upasamana samanusati. Contemplation on death is very good. Marana nusati. Always remember this. Marana nusati. This will give you the urgency. So that you will not procrastinate. Respectively together with it, mindfulness regarding the body, kaya nusati, and mindfulness regarding respiration, anapanasati. So these are the 8 types of nusati. Then the 4 illimables or the 4 modes of sublime conduct, Brahma vihara, means you can meditate on metta, compassion, equanimity, or sympathetic joy. The Pali equivalent are karuna, mudita, metta, and upeka. Then the one perception, that is the perception of loathsomeness of material food. This one very few people do. You want to do, you can try. Loathsomeness of food. He more of asks you to contemplate and imagine the food after you eat. After one day, what happened? After 2 days, what happened? Or you don't eat, you leave it there. You look at it, it's so loathsome. the flavor is only when you know how to cook it nicely and it smells very good. Then it tastes very good. Then you enjoy eating it. But after that, what does it become? That day I read a video, there was a joke, quite interesting. Maybe I share with you. He's a Singaporean guy. He was commenting on the British Empire. So, but actually the British are not so bad. Some people really condemn them, especially the Indians. But in a way, there is something that they do which is not that honorable. But looking back, I should say they actually have done quite a lot of good things. Like our country, they give us a lot of very good system of governments. Our tax system, our legal system, our land law, many of these laws. And our education system also. Actually, we inherited a very good education system. But of course, they were exploit us as colonial master. So this guy, he was giving a joke in Singapore. He talked about the British. He said, the British to him is like the colon, our big intestine colon in our human body. He said, what is this colon? Everything you take, your food, everything, it go in. After it come out, it's all shit. So that's why he said when they colonize people, they call it colonization. You understand? So every colony that they colonize is a colonization. Means they put you into the colon. So everything that come out is shit only, nothing else. So that one make a lot of people laugh. It so happened the English word is colonne. So colony also come from the word colonne. Then colonization also, I don't know why they use the same word, colonization. So we say when they colonize you, they put everything you have into the colonne. Then what come out is shit. They just give you back the shit. And they take all the good one. So in a way, lovesiness of food, you look at it, you must always remember. Whatever you eat, you think is very nice. That's why when you go for this, they call it what? You go to all these spiritual places, not like our spiritual trip, we still got good food. You go for some of these forest tradition or certain tradition, especially you become a new monk, you are the last to receive one. And do you know what is left? Normally all the liquid part. So towards the end, everything they put together in the bana, then they mix everything up, and you eat. So last time I used to hear certain things. Some of the monks, they are very particular. They say, initially when people offer, the food are still very nice. But the senior monks, sometimes they want to make fun of you. They mix everything up for you. They say, no difference. You eat inside also mix. But you know, if you mix the food and eat, and you don't mix the food and eat, there's a lot of difference. But they say, there is a delusion of the senses, understand? But when he comes to his own food, he don't mix. He slowly choose and pick. So these are the stories you tend to hear. But if you are a cultivator, you will know how to contemplate and reflect. And you can try them, no harm. Because I have given it a try. When I chew something, especially rice, white rice. Do you know white rice, if you chew it long enough, it is actually sweet because it's sugar, complex sugar, and you like to eat that white rice, especially the fragrant white rice, and the Japanese style of rice, you go for Japanese dinner or lunch, the food, the rice are very different. Then when you chew long enough, your saliva is actually enzyme. It's very good. It breaks down the food. And you can have better, what they call, digestion with that chewing. That's why it's good to spend a bit of time chew your food well. Then you really get the nutrient in. And you can really have the true taste of the food. But ultimately, when it's inside your stomach, it go through the process. So no difference in that. But when you warm it out, what you eat, you will understand what is loathsomeness. Then when you go for your big business, they always say, my teacher Achayantra actually got mentioned this. He said, all the good food, nice food, the tasty food that you eat, finally when it come out, it's not really what you think. The outcome, the final product is after the colon process, colonization. He said, everything come out is just that thing. Sometimes it smell and you also dare not smell. But you enjoy the food when you eat them, especially durian. And nowadays, petai also. Okay, we better go on. The one analysis of the four elements, this one is also under Satipatthana. Then the four arupajana, the realm of infinite space, infinite consciousness, the realm of nothingness, and the realm of neither perception nor non-perception. So according to the text, the 10 impurities and the mindfulness regarding the body, such as the 32 parts are suitable for those of the lustful temperament, because they tend to create a disgust for the body which fascinates the senses. The four illimitables and four colored kasina are suitable for those of a hateful temperament. The reflection of the Buddhas and so forth are suitable for those of a devout temperament. The reflection on death and peace, perception and loathsomeness of material food, and analysis of the four elements are suitable for those of an intellectual temperament. The remaining objects, chiefly reflection on the Buddha, reflection on loving kindness, mindfulness regarding the body, and reflection on death, are suitable for all, irrespective of temperament. There are six kinds of temperament, charita. They are lustful temperament, raga charita, hateful temperament, dosa charita, ignorant temperament, moha charita, devout temperament, sadda charita, intellectual temperament, bodhi charita, and discursive temperament, vitaka charita. Charita signifies the intrinsic nature of a person which is revealed when one is in normal state without being preoccupied with anything. The temperament of a person differ owing to the diversity of their action or karma. Habitual action tend to form particular temperament. Raga or lust is predominant in some, while dosa or anger, hatred, ill will in others. Most people belong to these two categories. There are a few others who lack intelligence and are more or less ignorant, moha charita. Akin to ignorant are those whose mind oscillates, unable to focus their attention deliberately on one thing, vitaka charita. By nature, some are exceptionally devout, sadda charita, while others are exceptionally intelligent, buddhi charita. Combining these six with one another, we get 63 times. With the inclusion of speculative temperament, ditti charita, there are 64 times. The subject of meditation are variously adopted to these different temperaments and types of people. Before practicing samadhi, the qualified aspirant should give a careful consideration to the subject of meditation. In ancient days, it was customary for a pupil to seek the guidance of a competent teacher to choose a suitable subject or object of meditation according to their temperament. But today, if no competent teacher is available, the aspirant must exercise his own judgment and choose one he thinks most suitable to his character. When the subject has been chosen or object of meditation has been chosen, he should withdraw to a quiet place where there are the fewest distractions, the forest, a cave, or any lonely places is most desirable, for there one is least liable to interruption during the practice. We just read through it quickly because these are not important. These are Hindu practices. The object of meditation, like I explained, who need it? People who don't have the spiritual faculty, they need it to anchor the mind so that they can develop mindfulness. But people don't understand this, so they use it for psychic purpose. They go and focus, concentrate, which is not the Buddha's teaching. The Buddha's teaching is to develop sati. That's why anapanasati is about training your mind to have sati, mindfulness of the in and out breath, not to focus on the breath, not to concentrate on the breath. It should be understood that solitude is within us all. If our mind is not settled, even a quiet forest would not be a congenial place. But if our mind is settled, even the heart of a busy town, in the heart of a busy town, may be congenial. The atmosphere in which we live acts as an indirect aid to tranquilize our mind. Next to be decided by the aspirant is the most convenient time, when he himself or his surrounding are in the best possible condition for practice. Yeah. Early in the morning, when the mind is fresh and active, or before bedtime, if one is not overtired, is generally the most appropriate time for meditation. But whatever the time selected, it is advisable daily to keep to that particular hour. For our mind then becomes conditioned to the practice. The meditating posture to serve as a powerful aid to concentration. These are all people who don't quite really understand meditation. That's why they teach you all this. So according to the Buddha, the domain of meditation is anywhere, any place, any time. As long as you are mindful and heedful, you are in the meditative state. So you don't go and choose all this and wait for all this. But you can have a religious routine that is conducive. It will help you. Then the other thing is also the posture. The Buddha already mentioned you can be in any posture. Standing, walking, sitting and lying down, or whatever you do, you can maintain mindfulness, heedfulness, leading to the meditative state. So all this you understand, you don't have to do like what they do. Then they say, Easterner generally sit cross-legged with the body erect. They sit placing the right foot on the left thigh and the left foot on the right thigh. This is the full lotus position. If this position is difficult, as it certainly is to many, the half lotus position may be adopted. That is simply placing the right foot on the left thigh and the left foot on the right thigh. When this triangular posture is assumed, the whole body is well balanced. The right hand should be placed on the left hand, the neck straightened so that the nose is a pendulum line with the navel. The tongue should rest on the upper palate, the belt should be loosened, and bodily and clothes neatly adjusted. Some prefer close eye so as to shut out all unnecessary light and external sight. Although there are certain advantages in closing the eye, it is not always recommended as it tends to drowsiness. Then the mind gets out of control and wanders aimlessly. Vagrant thoughts arise. The body loses its erectness. Quite unconsciously, the mouth opens itself, saliva derails, and the head nod. This only occurs to people who don't know how to meditate. If you know how to meditate, there is no such thing. Especially the mind wandering off. They don't know. It's the mental hindrance. If the mental hindrance are not there, the mind will not wander off. The mind will be very peaceful, very tranquil, very quiet, very still. That's why they don't know the real understanding of meditation. That's why they cannot develop the meditation. Then he somewhat quote the Buddha, the author. He said, the Buddha usually sit with half-closed eye, looking through the tip of the nose, not more than a distance of 4 feet away. Those who find the cross-leg posture too difficult may sit comfortably in a chair or any other support sufficiently high to rest the leg on the ground. It is of no great importance what posture one adopts, provided it is easy and relaxed. The key word is relaxed. That's why now only they talk about relax. So the key to meditation is ability to relax. The aspirant who is striving to gain one-pointedness of mind should endeavor to control any unwholesome thought at their very inception. This one again, not correct. We are not aiming for one-pointedness. No point. As mentioned in the Sutta Pitaka Nipata, it may be attacked by the 10 armies of the evil one. They are sensual desire, discouragement, hunger and thirst, attachment, sloth and torpor, fear, doubt, distraction and stubbornness, gain, praise, honor and ill-gotten will, fame, and self-praise and contempt of others or for others. On such occasion, the following practical suggestion given by the Buddha will be beneficial to all. So this one is think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. You can read through them. How bring a good thought opposite to the encroaching one, loving kindness in case of hatred. Then reflecting upon possible evil consequence. Those are the 5 ways to abandon unwholesome thought. Third one, he says, simply negate and become wholly inattentive to them. This is not correct. The third way is just relax, silent, and maintain awareness. You don't have to be whether attentive or inattentive. That is all the thought coming in again. So just relax and let things be, understand? Not? Then everything will settle down. That is the third way. That is the meditative way. Then the fourth way is to trace the cause which led to the arising of the unwholesome thought and thus retrospectively reversing it. Here he used the word forgetting them. You cannot forget them, understand? With understanding and wisdom, retrospectively reverse the unwholesome thought. Means all this wrong thought, they will become wholesome thought. Because when you understand how they arise, through self-delusion, through wrong view, what must you do? You straighten your view, then retrospectively reverse them all so that they won't become wrong thought. They become right thought. Number 5, direct physical force. No, the Buddha say willpower with tongue against the palate, determine. Just as a strong man overpower a weak person, so one should overcome evil thought by bodily strength. No, willpower. With teeth clenched, this one is correct, and tongue pressed to the palate, advised the Buddha, The monk by main force must restrain, oh sorry, constrain and coerce his mind. And thus, with clenched teeth and taut tongue, constraining and coercing his mind, those evil and unsalutary thoughts will disappear and go to decay. And with that disappearance, the mind will become settled, subdued, unified, and concentrated. Having attended to all these necessary preliminaries, the qualified aspirant retires to a solitary place and summons up confidence as to the certainty of achieving his goal. He makes a persistent effort to develop. Again, he used the word concentration. Actually, no. You're supposed to develop samadhi. You're supposed to stabilize your mindfulness and awareness. That's why all this, they don't understand, they go wrong. A physical body, like the kasina circle, only aids concentration. But a virtue like loving kindness has the specific advantage of building up that particular virtue in the character of the person. While meditating, one may intelligently repeat the words of any special formula, since they serve as an aid to evoke the idea they represent. However intent the aspirant may be on the object of his meditation, he will not be exempted from the initial difficulties that inevitably confront a beginner. The mind wanders, alien thought dance before you. This one sounds familiar for those who are heedless. The mind wanders, alien thought dance before you, impatient overcomes him. Owing to the slowness of progress and his efforts slacken in consequence, the determined aspirant only welcome this obstacle, the difficulties he cut through, and see straight to his goal, never for a moment turning away his eyes. Suppose, for instance, the aspirant takes an earth kasina for his object of meditation. The surface of the circle of about 1 foot in diameter is covered with clay and smooth and well. The concentration circle is known as preliminary object, parikama nimitta. So this is to develop concentration, leading to nimitta. He sets it down 4 feet away and concentrates on it, saying, Padavi, Padavi, earth, earth, until it becomes so wholly absorbed in it that all advantageous thoughts gets automatically excluded from the mind. This is false concentration. When he does this for some time, perhaps weeks and months or years, he will be able to visualize the object with closed eye. On this visualized object, they call it Ugaha Nimitta, which is a mental replica of the object. He concentrates until it develops into a conceptual image called Patibhaga Nimitta. Actually, no need so difficult. You watch our own candle. You light the candle there, especially the two lotus. You look at it. I tell you, for less than 1 or 2 minutes, you close your eye or turn away, the flame is still there. You understand or not? Because our retina can retain it for a while. Then if you want to concentrate and focus, of course, your mind get concentrated because it forces it into one object, that object of meditation. That's why you cannot think. And this is a conditioned state. So in the past, this type of meditation is very popular because it leads to psychic ability, energy field, concentration, can see nimitta, like got power, like you are special. Then luckily over the years, all this no longer popular. People know it's not the correct one. During my time, early days, when I was involved in the Dhamma and the meditation, 70s and the 80s, early, I tell you, jhana was very popular, meditation object. People go and buy that book, Visuddhimagga, the thick book by Buddha Gosa, and they read, and they they really go and check all this out and they go and practice. But my nature different. I cannot do all those things where I know it's not correct from the past. But then he quote again, page 528. According to Visuddhimagga, the difference between the first visualized image and the second conceptual image is that in the former, a form of the casino object appear, while the latter is like the disc of a mirror taken out of a bag, or a well burnished. How to pronounce this word? Kunshawa. Or the round moon issuing from the cloud. The conceptualized image neither possesses color nor form. It is just a mode of appearance and is born of perception. As he continuously concentrates on this abstract concept, he is said to be in possession of proximity concentration, upacara samadhi, and the ignite five hindrance to spiritual progress, means panchanivarana, means the five mental hindrance of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness of mind, and worry and doubt, are temporarily inhibited. They also know temporarily suppressed, inhibited by means of one-pointedness or ekagata. Then they have the yanic factor of piti, sukha, vitaka, and vichara. Eventually, he gains aesthetic concentration, apana samadhi. See, go into apana samadhi, means excess concentration, and become absorbed in jhana, enjoying the calmness and serenity of a one-pointedness mind. This one-pointedness of mind, achieved by inhibiting the hindrance, is termed purity of mind, citta visuddhi. See, they equate it to jhana, the second stage of the path of purification. For the water casino, one may take a vessel full of colorless water, preferably rainwater, and concentrate by saying apo, apo, water, water, until he gains one pointedness of mind. Then they teach you fire, wind, everything. We skip them. He may even concentrate on the various color. Blue is violet, actually. Yellow, red, and white flower. So no need to create. If from the past you have done all this light kasina, they will appear. Mine is violet. Violet. That nimitta came very fast and very strong. That's why when I was young, I straight away can see them. And they really change very fast. Effervescent. Light kasina may be developed by concentration on the unflickering lamp light, like I told you just now, or the circle of light made on the ground or the wall by sunlight or moonlight entering through a wall cervix or hole, saying aloka, aloka, aloka. Aloka means light. But don't go and do the one, look at the sun on. You better make sure you don't become so gullible. You look until your two eyes are so gone, I tell you. You cannot look at the sun's ray because it's too strong. Why must you look at the sun's ray? I also don't know. But there are people who believe in sun meditation, you know. Oh, so fast, 10:30 already. Okay, we finish off this one. Space kasina could be developed by concentrating on a hole, a span of four finger. All these are not important. We skip them. Then, asubha anu sati. You go back and read. Sila anu sati, jaga anu sati. All these are not really that important. Oh, okay. Never mind. We stop at page 530. Okay. So we will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merit, then we can break for our mini makan. Okay. Let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed. Then we shall share merits with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyantang anumodito chirang rakantu lokasasana etavata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo deo asatukalena sasa sampati heto cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko ipina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay homage to Tripajam, huh? Then we end.